when there's too much of carbon dioxide and other so-called greenhouse gases, our atmosphere ends up turning into an oven where the sunlight enters the planet but doesn't end up leaving. Air pollution has a significant lifetime impact on your cognition, your breathing, your heart. You can get pulmonary disease.
And how much are we building? We started to look into these numbers. We are building the size of New York every month. I love architecture. I would love to practice it, but not like this. Air pollution essentially has two issues, right? One is how do you capture or collect it? And second is what do you do with it?
And our devices collect and store these pollutants. And that's why the aspiration is to figure out a logistics model, which will get these particulates collected across the city and given to Tejas.
We have a three-stage process that we work with. It is collect, process, build. So we collect the carbon from various partners. We work with a 200-year-old craft and artisans, and we build any plain pattern or customizable tiles over here. So that's essentially the larger process of collect, process, and build.
Welcome to Mindful Businesses, presented by Sarani, and I'm your host, Vidya Iyer. In our podcast, we bring to you brands that are mindful in their practices and processes. A mindful business adopts and employs sustainable social, economic, and environmental practices. With countries, the UN, and global organizations setting frameworks and targets to reduce carbon emissions, we cannot emphasize how important it is to work in cooperation and in partnership with adjacent businesses to achieve these goals. Today, we bring to you two energetic and mindful entrepreneurs who are doing just that. We have Angad Daryani of Pran, Clean Air for All, and Tejas Sidnal of Carbon Craft Design, products made with upcycled carbon. Tejas joins us from Hubli, India, and Angad joins us from Mumbai, India. Welcome, Tejas and Angad.
Thanks for having us. This is Angad.
Thank you for having us. This is Tejas reporting from Hubli.
We are recording this episode on November 21st, 2021, and COP26 is in progress in Glasgow, where world leaders and delegates are meeting to discuss how to tackle pressing issues regarding climate change and limit global warming. Tell our listeners, Angad specifically, how does carbon get into our atmosphere?
I think just from an evolutionary standpoint, you know, historically, whenever animals or specific reactions took place in nature, you know, just as how fundamental chemistry works, you have to have conservation of energy. And this conservation of energy in physics is often calculated as kilojoules or joules. But in the chemical world, you have to have same kind of conservation of energy, but that's sometimes done through breaking or forming different bonds in materials. So one such gas or material happens to be carbon. Mm-hmm. And in the atmosphere, the carbon we refer to as carbon dioxide. When there's too much of carbon dioxide and other so-called greenhouse gases, our atmosphere ends up turning into an oven where the sunlight enters the planet but doesn't end up leaving because this continues total internal reflection. And that's how our planet heats up. And that's what we're all trying to solve together as humanity.
So when you talk about greenhouse gases, which are the other gases besides carbon dioxide?
Yeah, I think the second most prominent one is methane. The source for emission for methane, one of the largest sources, cattle. That's why the beef industry is often taken into consideration because many of these cattle farms have high methane emissions. But methane as a gas has a significantly lower volumetric impact to global warming compared to carbon dioxide. Simply because CO2 is more prominent, all thanks to humanity. And additionally, it's a very stable gas. So breaking up those molecules are very challenging. The other gases that we deal with are not so much associated with global warming, but with air pollution, as carbon monoxide, sulfur oxides, nitrous oxides, and CFCs, which ended up putting a hole into our ozone layer. That's the context. I think Tejas and I fall into the overlap between air pollution and global warming, because we started as air pollution and air pollutant mitigation companies, and have slowly moved into solving challenges associated with global warming.
You talked about air quality, you know, so when you open your weather app on your phone or on your computer, it often gives you the air quality for that day, you know, moderate, high particles and things like that. And in India specifically, several cities, the schools had to be shut down because of bad air quality, say in Delhi in November 2019. So how bad is the situation?
When you see dirty water, right, you can see it and you have an urge not to drink it. And we drink water, a healthy person, you know, 3 to 4 liters in a day. But with respect to air, we breathe like 86,000 plus times in a day. Right? Multiple times in a second. So why do we not put thought into what we're breathing as opposed to what we're eating or drinking? Mm-hmm. That's one of the bigger psychological barriers. But if you ask me how bad it is, I mean, we're a unit of power of 10 away from what we should be, or power of 100 away from what the air quality should be for it to consider it to be healthy. Like PM levels sometimes cross 999 parts per million in New Delhi in these seasons. It's supposed to be like below 50. So it's a significant problem to try and solve. And the fundamental challenge, I think, is that we only give attention to it in winter season. But the reality is that throughout the year, we're already in really bad air quality standard. Mm-hmm. Because there's fundamentally infinite sources of pollutants as particulate matter, the challenge becomes even harder and harder to try and solve.
So why in winter season specifically? Is it because the cold air just kind of traps it?
No, I don't think. In fact, particles lose energy at lower temperatures, just from, you know, there's lower vibrations in solid matter when you have a lower energy level. In winter, there's a large number of rice husk and stubble which is burnt. Now, the challenge is that since Delhi is landlocked, a lot of the air or wind that's flowing from neighboring states like Haryana, Punjab, where large farms exist, is channeled towards New Delhi. And with India's economic growth, there's more spending on infrastructure. So there's massive infrastructure projects being taken up across the country, and that's leading to a higher amount of particulate matter being dispensed into the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, if you ask a wealthy person today who can afford a Tesla, would you buy a Mercedes or a Tesla? They'll buy a Mercedes in India. So there's a clear market adoption issue as well with renewable energy and electric vehicles. So there, all of that put together gives you all this grief in the winter season.
Bombay also has similar problems. There was a landfill which self-combusted in 2016. I was actually in Bombay and I would wake up tired, like, you know, as if I'd run a mile.
I was there as well. That was in Devnar, right? I lived in Chembur most of my life. I saw that happening as well, but frankly speaking, it didn't feel very different because Chembur has also the RCF and the other on the pollution. So it's also known for having pollution most of the time in that area.
So Chembur is adjacent neighborhood to Devnar where the landfill was self-combusting, and RCF is the chemical fertilizer factory, which is also in the Chembur-Devnar area.
Yes, and that's what makes it like really unique in terms of an area which is locked between these pollutants. And that's where I lived most of my life. And I know what you mean. There was that time and we could feel it, but not so much different for us because I didn't feel the difference as much, but it was there. Yes, the levels of pollution really increased quite a bit at that time.
You know, there's a reason why Indian athletes often don't perform as well in soccer or other sports in the athletics, not because we don't have the infrastructure or people don't have the abilities. It's because naturally to exercise and match performance of foreign athletes, our lungs have to work 7 to 10 times harder because our air pollution is so much worse. And so if you are already exerting yourself that much to train and to get that desired output, you often reach saturation when you have to perform on the global scale.
It's kind of shocking that when we think of pollution, we think of, oh, my skies are not blue, or, you know, the birds are not doing well, or the, but we don't realize that it damages your health, your everyday life, and even performance of athletes, and your health in many, many different forms.
Yeah, I mean, if you see, even today, 9 out of 10 people living in the urban areas are living in like polluted regions right now. A classic example that I usually see it as a visual is during the pandemic. In Mumbai, there was a video that was floated around that dolphins came back in Mumbai, and everyone was going crazy about it. Like, how did dolphins come back over here? And that video was floating around. It was exciting to see it. And everyone was sharing images of before and after and how it was. And now when you go back, it's just back again, the same thing. And we are on the road. There's, again, the complex issue of air pollution, vehicles, human industries, a lot of it coming together back again. So yes, we have to solve it.
So you're talking about the dolphins in the Arabian Sea, which came back during the pandemic.
One funny, it's not funny, it's actually quite sad. But the reason I say it's funny is because it's a number we all know, but we pretend to sleep about. And that is that, you know, COVID-19 unfortunately killed about 3.5 million people in the first year. Air pollution kills 7 million people every single year. We don't take it nearly as seriously. The difference is that I think the reason COVID got more attention is the time frame to death was, you know, a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Air pollution has a significant lifetime impact on your cognition, your breathing, your heart. You can get pulmonary disease, memory. All these are significantly affected. And if you're really unlucky, then you'll start seeing significant, you know, respiratory problems, serious diseases. What happened amidst the pandemic was that for both of us, since air pollution disappeared, our company suddenly became irrelevant for that 1 year. No one was thinking about us, right? One investor I remember literally told me, is like, Ankur, this seems like a very futuristic idea. It's not really needed right now in the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
In a few months, you're going to call me again because your air pollution will come back when the farmers burn the stubble. So it's a disease or a problem that we are, I think, very conditionally fond of talking about.
Yeah, I remember having a similar same conversation rather with someone else as well. And it is the same, like, are you going to get enough raw materials? Because there is no pollution right now. And it is so funny to have that conversation. It's just right now because everything is shut, like literally shut. So it is going to start, right? So we're just going to be on the same stage again. So what do you do at that time?
So all these pollutions, like you say, when industries were shut, there was no pollution. Industries are up. Of course, there are now pollutions. But many of the industries, especially at least in the US context, they want to become net zero by 2050. So they are going to renewable energy, sustainable practices, moving to sustainable raw materials, scrubbing their effluents. But there are some industries which you cannot avoid, and they will still continue to emit. Which are some of those industries?
I think net zero is should not be the right metric to hit. It's like, how much of my lifetime emission can I offset while being entirely net zero? That's when you will see a reversal. Because to get to net zero, you will have significant emissions. You have to change your entire energy source. You have to change your entire grid, all your vehicles, and set up systems to capture the carbon emissions already done. Mm-hmm. So that is my personal take on net zero. The second challenge is that many of the so-called sustainable companies and sustainable materials are not regulated. So there is more of what makes you look good than what is actually being done. Right, I think Tejas and I have seen that we have mutual friends who claim to use air pollution but are actually picking up some other things and selling their product as made from air pollution. And they have exceptional branding, exceptional names associated with them because of that story that's being sold. I'm only 23 years old, right? So when I was growing up, I think for us, it was always that the future is pretty bleak, because why are we working so hard in school when the rivers are polluted, animals are going extinct, XYZ. So for me, 30 years is more than my lifetime till date to wait till people go to net zero. And so that's a very large number for me to take people seriously. They're saying in the next 30 years, like, you're probably not going to be alive and you'll leave it for us to deal with, right? So that's sort of my take on this situation.
That's a really good point. So the 70-year-old politician says we'll be a net zero in 30 years, and, you know, he's really not
right.
He's not really going to be around to enforce it.
Exactly.
My perspective to that is essentially talking about something which is like 30 years down the line is way too long. You don't know what's going to happen, what technology is going to change, how we're going to live. We're going to be in Mars. Probably it's not going to be the same planet. It's going to be different challenges. We don't know. Until then, we have Earth. So I don't believe in having really 30-year-old plans and then really defining everything around that. What's going to happen in the next 3 years is what really matters. And we are already seeing it's scientific data out there. 1.5 degree warming would really be sort of devastating to a lot of coastal cities. They're all going to be drowning. And what are we going to do then? These are things that I think we need to sort of think about more in terms of goals. Net zero is just a number that we're just going to more like validate ourselves, and the share prices are going to go up. And I think we just need to sort of, I mean, as Angad really mentioned, that we need to work backwards from what we can offset and start our journey from there.
What would you guys suggest?
Take it as an engineering problem, right? How many billion tons of CO2 must be removed from the atmosphere to slow down global warming and rather negate the rate? So when you know what the outcome should be, try to solve from there. How's a product designed, right? It's like, who's the end user? What problem must it solve? At what cost? For how long? And if you have that, then you know what to build on. I don't think politicians and corporate businessmen who have no scientific educational background are competent enough to try and solve global warming problems. And this is just coming from somebody who wants to see this solved and spending all their time trying to do it. But one person's not going to make any significant change.
Yeah, actually, it makes more sense for him to solve this problem than us, right? He's 23. He has more life to live.
rather work like crazy through it, because these guys are setting 2070 goals.
He's 10 years younger to me, so he has more life to live anyway. But yes, I mean, to the scale at which we are building right now, if I have to look at some solutions from my perspective as an architect, when we started to look at how do we build buildings and the way we are building right now, and how much are we building? We started to look into these numbers. We are building the size of New York every month.
And this is in India?
No, it's in the world right now. We are building the size of New York every month. That's crazy. Imagine 12 New Yorks are coming in every year. And that's the scale at which we are building right now. But who talks about materials? Who talks about how we are building? What are we using? So for me as an architect, it was really important. If I'm going to practice, really practice and build more buildings, I am only a part of the problem. I'm just polluting more. So why do I do that at the first place? I would love to practice architecture. Really, I love architecture. I would love to practice it, but not like this.
Like you say, what materials we use to construct is so important to achieve these goals of not releasing more carbon into the air. Now that you know how much carbon is going to be released every year, how will you solve it, Angad?
So it's not just how much carbon is released every year, it's how much do we need to offset? Because the 1.5 degree rise in temperature, we probably won't be able to control that in the right time. But before it goes to 2 degrees and 2.5 degrees, where a plethora of trapped viruses and bacteria are going to be let back into the oceans and the air, and also like cause cities like Mumbai to disappear. So it has to be an extreme multi-prong approach. And the reason I say extreme is because you have to hit stop and then you have to hit reset. you don't have to say, let's try doing things in parallel, because people don't like change. And if people don't like change, there's a psychological barrier to making transition happen. But when there's political will and when there is enforcement that this is the only way, that's when things may change. So from our side, of course, we're like, even in CO2 emission capture utilization, you have to pick one battle. If you pick all battles, you're not going to move anywhere. So Pran as a company is focused on direct air capture of CO2. And we started initially as a particulate company. That's why I said we started as air pollution mitigation technology and then, you know, moved into CO2 capture as well. So we have to, one, control the CO2 which is being emitted to begin with today. That's what's called capture at source. We don't do that. Our friends at Carbon Clean and other companies do that. And they're now big, but even their big is like ultra nano size for what's being emitted, right, every day.
Yeah.
And then direct air capture companies, it's so hard from an engineering standpoint and a cost standpoint that it's sad that there's only 8 or 10 companies like us who are doing it this aggressively that are funded and have like ultra rigid timelines. Like my team has to work Saturdays and Sundays to meet those timelines. It's absurd. And at the same time, then you have to store away the CO2 permanently for 1,000+ years. Because if you use it as dry ice or other means where it's going to get back into the atmosphere, you just spent a whole lot of money, a lot of energy and a lot of carbon to capture some carbon which was thrown back into the air. So that's where, you know, we look to companies like that of Tejas or, you know, companies like Charm Industrial who pack away the CO2 for thousands of years underground to try and make a change.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, while this is happening, like everyone should buy electric cars, or your energy source needs to move to solar, wind, geothermal, nuclear, and your grid needs to be changed. So there's a whole lot of work to be done. If for those who are greedy and a financial outcome focused, which is majority of humanity, I think there's tremendous market opportunity no matter what you do, should you choose to work in climate.
I must add that Pran means life in Hindi.
Right, stream of life, yeah. Yes.
How did you two meet? You're about 10 years apart, so you didn't overlap in school.
No. I think I met Angad at a conference in 2016.
Bangalore.
Yeah, in Bangalore. Yeah.
Under 25 Summit.
Yes, exactly.
We were both doing different things at the time.
Mm-hmm. As an architect, I was practicing at that time. I was building buildings and I was polluting. Guilty there. I was practicing at that time and he was speaking about his earlier work at that time. And that's how I spoke to him. I wasn't into this at that time at all.
2016, so you were what? How old?
I was 17, 18.
So what work were you doing at 17 and 18 that you had to go to a conference to present?
Oh, he's been super crazy in terms of his ambitions. And I think...
Passion.
Yeah, it shows. I think he loves buildings. I can say that for him.
Mm-hmm.
He was presenting something that he was building as well and the approach at that time. I think he would be able to explain that much better that time. I don't even remember. I just remember I met him. I spoke to him. I was inspired as well. And then I went on my journey from there.
Yeah, at the time I dropped out of school in 9th grade and started open schooling and started working with the MIT Media Lab. That time was one of the first people to bring 3D printing to India in 2012, 2013, went around colleges teaching students how to do that. And my work with MIT was focused on India Initiative. So how do we build cross collaboration between MIT and problems in health tech in India? We ended up building 3 labs across the country. I think more than 100 health tech projects came out of it. I think Ratan Tata eventually ended up funding that program between MIT and India. Yeah, I was working on a series of those health tech projects to democratize ECGs, ophthalmologic technologies for eye problem detection, all those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then went back to school and was doing other things. I think started a project called Remake a Village. Like, can you take the maker community of designers, architects, construction folks, teachers to upgrade villages rapidly without government intervention? That sort of work, but climate was always underlying. Started with I worked on electric vehicles, electric race cars in college, then built energy backup systems to power homes in Haiti. And eventually said, you know, this stuff is going to take too long to scale. That's why you should try to find solutions to air pollution and eventually carbon capture. So that's the context. I'm a hardware engineer, fundamentally.
I thought I knew him. So every day you talk to him, you come to know something new. I didn't know more than half of it. That's why you don't find information about Angad everywhere.
Yeah, I had a hard time trying to find information about your technology on your website.
He doesn't speak about it. Just goes doing it.
I think generally saying that the work that we're doing are very big promises to make. So you'd rather deliver first and then tell everyone how you did it, then tell everyone you're doing these things, but fall short in the delivery. I think too many people have done the latter. So our choice was do the former. If you fail, open source all the research and, you know, say what all you tried and didn't work out, so someone can pick it up from there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just not the type to go out and make noise.
Not how they say fake it till you make it kind of a thing. Opposite of that.
It won't get you too far.
So you dropped out of school in 9th grade. And what did your parents think about that? In India, people are very academic focused. That's how my parents were. And I'm assuming that your parents, maybe not supportive, but did they understand why you were doing it?
It would be a problem if I weren't doing well in school. I was doing well in school, but I was very frustrated. And they're not the kind of parents to pressure me for anything. So as far as you are, I think, like you mentioned, parents are academically oriented. My parents are learning oriented. So they don't care whether I learn it from one way or another. As far as I'm learning and growing and doing well, that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was always throughout school top 3 of the class. So when I said I want to quit school, it's more of a concern that did someone bully you or something rather than academic trouble. It took like 2 weeks or so, but of conversation with my tutors, I didn't really leave education. I left my school. I did 2 board exams. Normally you'd end up doing 1 if you're in school. And I took those 10th grade exams in my 9th grade. So I had a free year basically. And since I didn't have to go to school, I could learn and do homework at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have to go to tuitions or do homework. And that time was spent playing soccer or building things.
That's so great. I wish I had that life. It was totally different for me. It wasn't the same at all. Like mediocre student land up anywhere with that. Parents were always about marks. They always cared whether you passed, how much marks did you get? Was it 80 or was it 95? Why not 96? That's how it was. Those things drove. But I think what really stuck is, as you said, that's the common string, which is what I would take is you don't stop education. You don't stop learning. What really matters is it's a formal education, which is what puts us into workplace oriented jobs that we are in. We are trained for that. We are not trained to solve problems. That's a problem. That's really a problem.
So that was 2016. How did you guys reconnect?
I think I dropped you a message on Instagram, or you did, one of the two, right?
I remember I did. I think you were in the US at that time. I had seen he was working on the system back then. And there was one of the media posts, I think, that came out. I don't remember.
Yeah, CNN. Yeah, I think I posted a picture. Yeah, I think, yeah, that was it.
Correct. And I think that triggered, oh, great, he's working on air pollution as well. And we are working on air pollution as well. So, like, let's connect now. And we had spoken just for like 5 minutes, not even 5 minutes in 2016. That's about it. Not even more than that. But just one message back again. And we both knew that I think you're still trying to solve. It's the same problem. And when you come back, please do let me know and we could sort of catch up. And I think I don't even remember if we met. When did we meet after that? I don't think we met until...
We met in the pandemic when Tejas came to Mumbai for some work. And I think we went on a walk late in the night.
That was 2 years after that though.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a very slow turnaround time. He's very patient.
When you know the vibe is good, when you know the chemistry is there, when you know that people are genuine to solve the problem, you connect.
So What are you two doing together now? What is your solution?